Okay, we're not live. We're a couple days late, but the good news is I'm not that sick anymore. So that means, oh yes, it's time for Hacker Mind. I want to stress that I'm doing this at great personal expense to myself because, in case you didn't notice, I do still have a little bit of a cold. Now, I do want to apologize for missing an episode. I know it sucks. You know, Dash never gets sick. It's always me. Blah, blah, blah. But I am here. You know, my throat's still a little raw. I might still be sniffling. I might still be coughing. But, I just thought it was important to get a show done, to make sure the listeners know that we didn't forget about them. But unfortunately, yeah, Dash is not with us tonight. So it's going to be just me for the rest of the hour. Now, why Dash isn't here? Well, apparently, I guess he would just rather wait until Thursday, so that's up to him, and I understand that. He's got other things going on, so I just wanted to get an episode in because I know there are some important things that I wanted to mention, and I know that many of our listeners have been talking about them, so we're going to get to those in just a little bit, just to give you an idea of some of the things I want to mention tonight. We have a story about the RIAA being attacked. Now, I know many of you have probably heard about this already, but I thought I'd mention it. The Recording Industry Association of America had their website DOS'd. So we'll get into whether or not that's good or bad, and I would like to have Dash here for that, but we can always talk about it next Thursday when he's back on the show. OpenSSH, Secure Shell, I know. Well, hopefully all of you use it, but yeah, great news. A new release was trojaned, I guess you could say backdoored. How nice, you know, I just reinstalled Linux and downloaded all the new stuff that I need. How wonderful. Anyway, a presidential advisor is actually condoning and encouraging computer hacking, so we'll get into that. And I want to mention some more fun stuff dealing with IPv6. I guess you can say that's IP version 6. And we'll talk about how you can get onto the IPv6 internet and all sorts of fun stuff. So we'll get into that in just a little bit. But first, I want to give my throat just a little break and give you this to listen to.
Sorry. The number you dialed cannot be reached with the carrier access code you dialed. Please check the code and try again, or call your carrier for assistance.
We're sorry. Due to telephone company facility trouble, your call cannot be completed at this time. Will you try your call again later?
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check the number and dial again, or call your attendant to help you.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed from the phone you are using. Please read the instruction card or call your operator to help you.
The call you have made requires a coin deposit. Please hang up momentarily, listen for dial tone, deposit coin, and dial your call again.
The number called is busy. A special ringing will tell you when the line is free. Please hang up now.
Remember, you must now dial 1 plus your area code, or 0 plus your area code, and the number for long distance and operator assisted calls.
The time allotted for you to dial has been exceeded. Please hang up and try your call again.
The long distance company you have dialed is experiencing a temporary service problem. Please try your call again later.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the World Veterans Conference Call. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a brief answering session. Instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star then 0 on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would like now to introduce your host for today's conference, Ms. Justina Gruber. You may begin your conference, ma'am.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. It's wonderful to be with you again today. I'm pleased to announce that today we have Jacob Shear with us. Jacob Shear is a senior attorney and director of the National Resource Defense Council's International Program. He joined NRDC in 1976 and has worked on a full range of global environmental and nuclear issues. He's been following the 1992 Earth Summit, and since then, he's focused on developing innovative mechanisms to address the implementation gap, a lack of governmental action to fulfill international commitments. Most recently, he has attended pieces of the PEPCOM for the Johannesburg Summit that will take place in August, and having just returned from there to D.C., he's joining us today. Welcome, Jacob.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, why don't you start with telling our audience a little bit about the World Summit on Sustainable Development.
We're sorry. We cannot process your custom calling request at this time. Please try your call again later.
Now, speaking of odd intercept recordings, this better work.
Because of heavy calling, your call cannot be completed. Please try your call again later. This is a recording, 20353.
Because of heavy calling, now, why do I play that? I have been getting this recording pretty much nonstop for at least the past several weeks. I think it really started right after H2K2. When I first came home, I had started dialing some random 800 numbers, and more I started hearing this one recording that says, due to heavy calling. And I had no idea what it meant. And to be honest with you, I still don't. I had tried getting through to an operator, and they said to me that if it's an 800 number problem, they couldn't help me with it, which is complete crap, but I don't know. So, I don't know, that's the weird recording of the week. Usually you just get something that tells you your call cannot be completed, there's something wrong with the number you dialed, whatever, but I don't know, either these guys are really getting overwhelmed, or they just stuck that in there for the hell of it because they had nothing else. I don't know, but I am determined to find an operator that will actually be able to tell me what that is. What I'd like to do is find a regular number that has the same recording and then ask the operator, yo, lady, dial it and tell me what it be. Operators, they're never there to help you when you need them. Presidential advisor encourages computer hackers to break software. This comes from the Associated Press, Las Vegas, July 31st. An advisor to President Bush encouraged top computer security professionals and hackers Wednesday to try to break computer programs. That shouldn't be a problem. I break stuff all the time. Offering to support and protect good faith researchers from the legal wrath of software makers. Richard Clark, Bush's computer security advisor, told hackers at the Black Hat conference that most security holes in software are not found by the software makers but by independent users. Some of us here in this room have an obligation to find the vulnerabilities, Clark said. Government-funded computer research facilities have identified thousands of vulnerabilities in computer software over the past year, including those in Microsoft operating systems and programs by companies such as Oracle, Sun, and America Online. Such vulnerabilities can allow criminals to break in or disrupt home or business computers. And then it says here that MSNBC is a Microsoft-NBC joint venture. No kidding. Clark cautioned that hackers should be responsible in reporting program mistakes. A hacker should contact the software maker first, he said, then go to the government if the software maker does not respond, or does not respond soon enough. Hackers commonly share their findings with others in their community through email lists or websites, but how much they should disclose is a running debate among computer security professionals. Some argue that full disclosure is best. Others say a hacker should only warn that a problem exists without showing how to take advantage of it. Clark said that hackers should not help criminals by showing how to exploit a programming bug before the software maker has a chance to fix the problem by issuing a patch or fix. And he's quoted as saying, "It's irresponsible and sometimes extremely damaging to release information before the patch is out." Yeah, so this computer advisor is basically saying that hackers should break programs. Now, how do I feel about this? Well, first off, it sounds like a very positive thing as far as hackers are concerned. You know, it sounds like good news. It sounds like someone is actually finally appreciating hackers, and they're finally getting the recognition they deserve for something other than just breaking the law all the time. So I'm completely in favor of that. But one has to wonder, you know, what is this guy really saying when he says to people, I encourage hackers to break software. Now, hackers do a lot more than just break software, at least as far as I'm concerned. I know people have their own independent definitions. They feel that hackers are nothing more than computer programmers, or hackers could work on cars, blah, 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 whatever. But hackers do a lot more than just code and break software. They explore. They see what's out there. They romp around the internet, if you will. And phone lines, for that matter. So what I want to know is, what would happen if a hacker broke into a system, looked around, installed a back door, had fun, but didn't do any damage, and then reported it? You know, would this guy still think that's okay? Because hackers have been doing this for years, and personally, you know, if it's a big public mainframe database that hundreds of users have access to, I don't think there's a problem with it. As long as no damage is done, nothing is deleted, and nothing has changed, I don't think there's a problem with going in there and leaving yourself a way back in. You know, to me, that's just harmless exploring. That's just people playing around with technology. So I'm really curious to see what this guy would say about that. You know, he says that people should break programs, but, you know, something tells me that he's just referring to computer programmers sitting at home playing around with code, which, again, is a good thing, because even the DMCA even wants to outlaw that. So I'm definitely not going against what he's saying. I'm not trying to tell people that this is a bad thing, but I do have my reservations, and I think everyone should. You know, anytime the government says, "Yeah, hackers, go ahead and do this," that's okay. You got to be careful. You really got to be careful, because as far as I'm concerned, you don't want hackers becoming corporate slaves. Okay, now that's just a personal thing. You know, that's just me. Some people don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I don't think that hackers should be out there to only help big businesses. Because to me, hacking is about kind of losing my voice here, so bear with me. Hacking is about playing around for the fun of it. You know, if you play around for the simple fact of helping a corporation, you know, to me, that detracts from the whole hacker spirit. Now, you may disagree, and that's fine. I know we've gotten into big arguments on our message board about this. You know, a lot of people have different feelings about what a hacker really is. But I don't know. To me, I don't want to see hackers becoming what the government wants them to be. I don't think there's anything wrong with hackers as they are right now. And I think rather than mold themselves into something else, which is what I think the government is trying to do for the most part, I think that, well, I would like for people to accept hackers for what they are. So, will that ever happen? Who knows? You know, as long as hackers keep making payphones ring all over the place, keep doing really stupid stuff, like breaking into emails, you know, one can debate whether or not that really is hacking, but as long as people continue to do that stuff, whether it's making amazing things happen or just doing downright stupid stuff, people are always going to be paranoid against those that know more. So we'll have to see where this all winds up, and it looks good so far. It looks like this is a positive turn, but we'll have to see what happens. And I have to scratch that off in the notebook. Oh, you know, it's wonderful being sick, folks. Let me tell you. All right, Thursday morning, I wake up, and, was it Thursday morning? Yeah, I think it was. Thursday morning, I wake up, and I have this little scratchy throat right on the right side, you know, right over here on the right side of my throat. It kind of, you know, it's one of those things you kind of think to yourself, ah, it's just a little dry throat, you know, I just need a drink of water. But for me, I always know when I'm getting sick, because it always starts on the right, and then the sore throat moves across my throat to the left, and that's where it ends. How do I know that? Well, years of experience, believe me. I've had more than my fair share of sore throats. So yeah, Thursday I wake up, and I have a sore throat. Midday rolls around, and I'm thinking, oh boy, you know, by now I'm starting to get sick, I'm feeling like crap. Take my temperature, it's about 101, 102, something like that. And I tell Dash, you know, look, man, I'm not feeling too good. You know, which is never a good thing on a Thursday. You know, this stuff always happens on a Thursday. So I told him that, and, you know, he understood. He knew that, you know, people get sick. But I was very disappointed because I hate missing shows. You know, I know the listeners depend on us to be there every week, but, yeah, you know, it's not possible. It's not possible, especially with the current technological setup. Now, I know some of you had volunteered, actually, to host the show, and you know who you are. Thanks for the interest, and thanks for the suggestion, but, nah. I'd rather do a makeup myself. There's just something, I don't know, I'm not comfortable. Now, maybe it's an insecurity on my part. I'm just not really comfortable with just handing my show over to someone else. I'm sure you do a great job. You know, it's nothing personal. If you have a beef with me, go ahead and email me. You know where I am. You know who I am. So, I don't know. Thanks, but no thanks. I can handle it. You know, unlike Dash, who's probably getting drunk right now, sitting at home, and I don't know. But speaking of Dash, I had asked him to find some information about a special topic that we want to talk about on next Thursday's show, which is, well, the Thursday coming up. We actually want to dedicate the hour to a particular topic, and this might become a regular thing. We might actually have a topic of the week, and whether or not we give a whole hour to it, well, that remains to be seen, but it's just an idea, and hopefully it could maybe put a little bit more variety into the show. You know, make it a bit more structured. And, you know, if you think it's not structured already, I don't know. It's just, it'll be something different. So I don't want to give away any information. I don't want to tell you what it's going to be about. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but it will be pretty cool. So I suggest you tune in on Thursday. It's going to be a fun episode. Not exactly as much fun as an all-nighter. Okay. But, yes, folks, that's coming soon. Don't worry, you'll be able to download that, and we're working on the videos. But it will be a good episode, so I encourage you, if you're free on Thursday night, to tune in. Yeah. So be there or be square, as they say. All right, now, let's see. See, Dash isn't here, so I have to fill in the time with something else. Now, oh, isn't that lovely, folks? Oh, yeah. Nice clear head. Oh, it's great being sick. Yeah, I have to, now that I've pretty much repulsed all of our... I think that's a word. Now that I've repelled, whatever it is, all of our listeners, let me try to fill in for Dash by getting something else on the line. Now, I can't remember if I ever played this error message before, but I don't know. I'm on a whole intercept recording fixation tonight, so bear with me, okay? I got to do something. Okay, now, what the hell is that? Well, I'd like to know myself. Now, the number he gave is 222-711-322-5460. Let's see what we get when we call it again. This time. I know what you're saying. What do you mean 17? Well, after the 200, that's where the numbers change, depending on when you call. I'm going to try it one more time to see what we get. So far we've gotten 22 and 17, and then it just dials a number. I'm assuming it dials the digits that it reads, but I can't be sure because I don't have a DTMF decoder, or I should say a touchtone decoder. Okay, 16 that time. Now I've gotten times when it was 24, when it was 18. What this is, I don't know. But let me see. What kind of phone number can we make out of this? Well, I know that I'm looking at the last few digits, seeing if there's any type of area codes that I recognize, and there's really not. This is the 800 number, so I don't want to bother with trying to make a local call. Well, you know what the heck? Let's try to take the last seven digits and make a local call. Just out of curiosity, what might happen? And I seriously doubt anything will. Probably wake up some old lady.
Please dial the numeral 1 or 0 plus error.
Okay, that's what I thought might happen. Actually, I was kind of hoping that I would get one of those recordings I mentioned before. All right, well, we have 711 in front of that. I don't think that's an area code. I could be wrong. And if anyone has that area code, I apologize, but... Well, let's give it a shot. I'm going to put in carrier access code before to make the call cheaper because, well, I'm a cheap ass. Uh-oh. That's not good. Let's see what we get.
Please do not dial the numeral 1 or an area code when making a local call.
Now you don't want it. Now you don't want it. All right. If he insists that is a local call, let's then take the last four digits after those first three. This guy didn't piss me off.
Relay Connecticut, CA6437, may I have a...
Now, what is that? Don't worry, I'll try it again. Now, what did I do to get that? Well, gosh, I took some digits, I took the first seven digits that were after the two numbers that changed. I wonder what it could be. Now, we're going to find out what he was going to ask me for in just a bit, and maybe if we can give him something, and we'll see what happens. That I did try to get Dash on the air, but he wasn't having it. I thought it'd be cool to come back and have the voice of Dash interrupt on the phone, but well, folks, he's just not having it. But that's okay. That's all right. We will survive. Let's see. We got a lot of numbers here. Not really sure what we're gonna find on the other end of this number, but. Well, as hackers, we have to try. We have to experiment and see what happens.
Relay Connecticut, CA 9167. May I happen to be calling?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is wrong number. Okay, Relay Service Connecticut. What is Relay Service Connecticut? I'll be honest with you, folks. I have not I have not heard this before. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go online. Ooh, yeah. That's something weird to do on a hacker show. All right, let's see. Relay service. I have U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Relay Connecticut. Relay Connecticut history. Ah. Alexander Graham Bell and his telephone. I'm at relayconnecticut.com. Apparently, this is a TTY service for people who, I guess can't hear, have trouble talking. Yeah, they had something like that on Off the Hook, actually. I know someone had called in using one of these services, so that's what that is. Yeah, I guess it doesn't really work if you... Actually, I don't know how that works. How do you... If you're able to call them, how come you couldn't call someone else? I mean, if you're calling someone that really can't hear that well, I kind of doubt that this person will be able to be of any assistance. Unless the person you're calling has the TTY service, you know, and they're able to type out their responses. Now, I did not mean for that to happen, because I know a lot of people are saying how we copy Off the Hook, which we don't. You know, eat me, basically, is what I want to tell you. But, I did not know that was going to happen. But there you go, RelayConnecticut.com. I guess that's a way of making calls. Now, what I'm suspecting here is that that's not really the phone number. It's just 711. So let's see if that's the case. Let's just dial 711, because I think that's what it is. I don't think there's a 711 exchange. Yep, that would be 711. Okay, well, I guess that still doesn't answer any questions that we had about that mystery number on the intercept recording. And until I can get a hold of an operator to ask her what the hell it's all about, I guess I'll never know. But let's move on to some other interesting topics that we have to talk about tonight. I guess I should just talk about the RIAA. This is something that's been on my mind for a while now, and, I'm struggling here. The Recording Industry Association of America was recently DOS'd. For you morons out there, that means it had a denial of service attack ran against it. So basically some idiots decided, hey, I'm going to flood these guys and take them offline for a while. Now, I know that many people on our board, especially on our board, were very happy about this. They didn't see anything wrong with DOSing the RIAA, especially when they were the ones that suggested DOSing peer-to-peer file-sharing networks who they believed were sharing wares and, you know, copyrighted materials and so on and so forth. So, in a way, I suppose this is sweet justice, I guess? Sweet vengeance? Whatever you want to call it. But let's think about this. You know, we're always against DOSing people. We're always against attacking people, you know, and I know that most hackers are against doing damage and, you know, breaking into personal PCs, you know, stuff like that. So, first of all, I don't condone what the RIAA was suggesting. I don't even think they were clear-headed that day. I think they were smoking something. I don't know. They're idiots. They should not be going around attacking people, especially when they could destroy sensitive data on someone's machine and they are not even held responsible for it. Now, if you do want to put up a complaint or sue the RIAA, you would actually have to get permission from the Attorney General before you could sue. And it would have to be for over $250, and you could sue. And I think if it's under that, then you have to get permission. Some crap like that. Either way, you wouldn't be able to sue them, believe me. Alright, so that's not fair. That really sucks. But let's think about this. What good does DOSing them do? Well, it makes us feel good. You know, it gives us that, like I said, that feeling of vengeance. But all in all, it really doesn't do much except create pity for the RIAA. It paints hackers in a bad light. It makes them seem like criminals. It makes them seem like that's all they do. Now, I happen to believe that, like with so many other things, just because you do this, just because you run a DOS, does not make you a hacker. Well, that's especially true of a DOS, because there is no skill involved. You know, anyone can do it. It's like breaking into an email account. You know, just because you do it does not make you a hacker. And so what I'm wondering is, should the hacker community stand behind someone who does a DOS attack? You know, maybe we could say that, you know, publicly we should say that it's a horrible thing, but behind closed doors we're saying, yeah, get him. I don't know, but I think in the long run, it's really just gonna, you know, maybe even if it doesn't hurt hackers, it's not gonna help them. All right, by DOSing the RIAA, you're not gonna help the hacker world. You're not gonna help the file sharing world. You're not gonna help anyone. I mean, do you honestly believe the RIAA is gonna say, whoa, wait a minute, you know, we didn't know you were gonna do this. We're sorry. We won't try to stop you anymore. No, that's ridiculous. So yeah, I mean, if you want to support it because it feels good, because it feels like vengeance, it feels like justice, like this should be happening, fine. You know, I'm not going to argue with you because I agree with you. You know, I think that it does feel that way, and I think that, you know, the RIAA is getting what they deserve. But sensibly speaking, rationally speaking, it's not going to solve anything, and it's not going to help anyone. So, pretty much all I have to say about that. And I, as with everything else, I welcome your feedback. Oh, it sucks being this way. I welcome your feedback either to my email, screamer@hackermind.net, or on our message board. And if you can't figure out where to find that, oh boy, you don't even deserve to touch a computer. But that can be said for a lot of people. And let's move on here, because I do want to cover the fun stuff, and we have some more news articles. Aside from my little Intercept recording obsession tonight, I have an article thing going. IPv6. It's not your mother's internet. It's not your mother's IP, for that matter. Let me read you a couple paragraphs from the current issue of Linux Journal. It's from an article by Ibrahim Haddad and Mark Blanchett. It's called "Supporting IPv6 on Linux Server Node." The current version of the IP protocol, IPv4, has proved to be a robust, easily implemented, interoperable, and has stood the test of scaling to the size of today's internet, most of which uses IPv4, now nearly 20 years old. IPv4 has been remarkably resilient in spite of its age, but it's beginning to have problems. The initial design of IPv4 did not take into consideration several issues that are of great importance today, such as large address space providing a solution for the address crunch problem, mobility, security, auto-configuration, and quality of service. To address these concerns, the Internet Engineering Task Force, IETF, has developed a suite of protocols and standards known as IP version 6, which incorporates many of the concepts and proposed methods for updating IPv4. Some of the IPv6 features include a new header format, a larger address space, which is 128 bits, an efficient hierarchical addressing and routing infrastructure, the availability of stateless and stateful address security, built-in security, better support of mobility, and a new protocol for neighboring node interaction. As a result, IPv6 is not only going to fix a number of problems in IPv4, it will also add many improvements. IPv6 is expected to replace IPv4 gradually, with the two coexisting for a number of years during a transition period. Now, you might be saying to yourself, what the hell is IPv6? Well, if you know anything about regular IP addresses, you probably know how they look, right? I mean, do I really have to explain what an IP address looks to you? You know, what it looks like to you? I mean, that should be obvious. It's got, what do you call them? Four octets? You know, it's got a bunch of dots and a bunch of numbers. Oh man, I know I'm going to get emails for that explanation. Anyway, IPv6 looks a bit different. It has a number, two colons, a forward slash, and then another number. Now, what's so great about that? Well, moving through the article here, we see that, I want to give you the exact number. I don't have it off the top of my head. I know that it allows for way more internet addresses than we currently have. Here we go. Okay, the address space provided, and this is by IPv6, is a forward slash 48, which gives 16 bits. Okay, that's 65,536 subnets. Each may have up to 2 to the 64th nodes, 64 bits. Okay, this is much more than the entire current internet. Alright, so you could have billions of addresses all belonging to you with this new protocol. Now, how do you get it? Well, if you have a Linux kernel, you already have it. Now, you can go to freenet6.net. And you can get further information about it there, or I know there are other sites, like I think one of them is ipv6.org. I don't want to give out bad information here, but I think linux-ipv6.org. Search around. Do a Google for IPv6, and you're bound to come up with a ton of hits. Now, if you want to get it, all you have to do is compile your kernel so that it works with it. Alright, if you want, you can upgrade your kernel to the newest version by going to kernel.org, download the newest version, untar it, I don't think I have to tell you that, put it into your user source file, and then basically just do a regular old make x config, and, I forget the exact name of the button that you have to click on, and I know if I say the wrong thing, people will get pissed. Okay, yeah, that's it. First click on Code Maturity Level Options, and then when it asks you yes, no, whatever, click yes. Then go down to back out of that and go down to Networking Options. Now, in there, it's going to find, it'll show you a bunch of modules that you can add to the new kernel. Be certain to say yes to the IPv6 protocol. It'll say that it's experimental, but do it. Get out of there, save it, of course, update your system map, update Lilo, if that's what you use to boot, so that you can boot your new kernel. And that's pretty much it. Shut it down, restart. When you get to Lilo, boot your new kernel, and hopefully if all goes well, it'll start up for you. And then, as Dash likes to say, you're cooking with gas. Then you'll have IPv6. But now you can't get online right away. Go to freenet6.net, and they have a program called TSP, and I think it's TCSP or TSCP, some crap like that. The actual thing is TSP. That's what they're offering you. I'm not sure the name of the actual file. And download that, and that'll actually what that'll do is create a tunnel over the IPv4 internet to a backbone, which I believe is located in Canada. And on this backbone, there's a bunch of nodes that are being tested, they're being played with, you know, by companies, by hackers, by everybody. And you can actually tunnel your way into that backbone, and here's the cool part. This is what really fascinates me about it. It's like being on an entirely new internet. It's like being on Internet 2. It's like, I like to call it the sprawl. You know, it's like being in a whole new world. You know, you're in a place on the internet that not everyone can get to. You know, you're in a special network. You know, there's something cool about that. For anybody who's ever, especially for phone freaks, you know, people that love to pick up the phone and dial odd numbers and hear weird recordings and, you know, and route calls the way they want to, and then wonder, you know, where the hell am I in this massive network. This is like the same thing, except using a computer, of course. You're actually able to get onto this backbone, and if you download all the right utilities, I think they mentioned some of them on Freenet 6. I know you can get Net Utils or Net Tools, Net Tools and IP Utils, and just you can actually get Telnet 6. I think you can try Netkit, or you can also get it in Usagi-kit, Usagi.tools, or dash tools. Do a search for those. Again, you're bound to come up with them. I had some trouble compiling them. I had a couple of compilation errors, so I'm working on that, but I'm really looking forward to getting it all set up. Then I can actually start telnetting to all these other machines and actually seeing what's out there. And I don't know, that gets me excited. You know, maybe it's just me, but I think it's pretty cool. So give that a try. Now, if you want to be able to telnet into your machine using IPv6, you're going to have to get xinetd, or, you know, the inet daemon for Linux. You're going to have to get xinetd, so if you don't have that installed already, you're going to need it. And but there are plenty of tutorials out there that will explain it to you, how to set it all up and get it working. As with anything else, you might have trouble at first, but play around with it, and once you get on, it's pretty damn cool. It's a whole new world, and I hope to see people on there. All right, let me cross off the old IPv6. But seriously, folks, give it a try. What I would love to do, and I know I'm always coming up with these crazy ideas that never go anywhere, I would love to get a server on the IPv6 backbone that people can connect to. Oh boy, again, losing the voice. That way, you know, HackerMind can be marking unmarked territory, I guess. I don't know. Going where no other hacker has gone before, even though there's probably about 2,000 hackers on there right now, we like to think we're the first. Alright, now, well, I can't really say this is a first, but it is surprising, I guess. Maybe, possibly, yes, no. OpenSSH Trojan. This comes from John Lake. I never like it when my floppy drive actually tries to access something and there's nothing in there. What are you doing? Ah. Sorry, folks. I mean, I'm a hacker, but you expect me to know about computers? Jeez. Yeah, by John Layden from the Register. It's dated August 1st, 2002. 10:39 a.m. If you need details. Picky. Copies of OpenSSH packages on popular download sites have been trojaned, developers have warned. Oh, Dash, what have you been up to? Overnight, it was realized that the tarball for OpenSSH 3.14p1, yeah, that would be the one I downloaded, on the main OpenBSD, that's ftp.openbsd.org, mirror, was compromised. After developers noticed that the checksum of the package had changed, other mirror sites might also be affected. The malicious code is not particularly sophisticated, but it is a remotely controllable program that could give potential attackers root access to victims' machines. That's why I removed it. The backdoor is in the make file that comes with the package, not the OpenSSH software itself. Initial analysis suggests that code has been added to the package, which generates a shell script which, when compiled, tries to contact 203.62.158.32, and that would be web.snsonline.net on port 6667. Isn't that IRC? It seems that the Trojan is executed during build only. Yes, it is IRC. Duh. Who compromised the OpenSSH package, and their motives remain unclear. Let me tell you, folks, it was definitely Dash Interrupt. Okay, that was just for his benefit, because I know he's undoubtedly going to download this. Dash, I'm kidding. Relax. Oh, I can see him getting arrested now. I'm kidding. Damn, feds just can't take a joke. OpenBSD developers have been informed on the issue and have done nothing about it. No, that's not in here. And a cleanup operation can be expected to commence shortly, which In developer time will be, maybe 7 years. For now, however, users would do well to exercise extreme caution in updating their machines. Yeah, extreme caution. Don't download it. OpenSSH is a free version of the SSH Secure Shell Communications Suite. Or is that suit? I think it's suite. Yeah, it's suite. And is used as a secure replacement for protocols such as Telnet, Rlogin, RSH, and FTP. Secure replacement. Yeah, not anymore. Normally, I would comment on stuff, but I think that pretty much speaks for itself. Ah, boy. Let's see. Do I have anything else to call tonight? Actually, yes, I do. And no, this is not an error message, so you can relax. Alright, scratch things off. Oh, I'm dying. I really wish I remembered what this was, though. Oh. Aside from being the weirdest damn ring I've ever heard, it's supposed to lead to a messaging service. Unfortunately, I've only gotten through once. But it's a cool ring. Alright, two more sets. That's one. And that's two. Okay, well, I'm so embarrassed. That is a messaging service that actually lets you send either text messages or voice messages. Now, I had... Oh, I hate when I feel that sore throat coming back. I had selected a voice message, and it was going to transfer me to an operator. I disconnected thinking, hey, let me try this on the show. Of course, I could never get through again. But I will give you the number, so maybe you'll have more luck. The number is 1-800-483-9877. And I guess just to fill you in, the other numbers that I called tonight were 1-800-636-2244 and 1-800-415-5555. Folks, this is recorded. If you miss those numbers, you know what to do. I would like to add that that weird recording that we heard with the string of numbers and then the touch tones, I have always gotten that recording in a prefix, or, I guess prefix is the right word. It's always an 800 number, but I've always gotten a prefix that have the first two digits of the prefix as 63. So, in this case, it was 636, but every time, like, I've tried 638. I think I have another one here, actually. I wrote it down a while back. Yeah, here it is. This is a 638 number. Nothing too exciting, but just to prove a point.
218-7-1-1-8.
Well, you know how the rest goes. So, 6-3 something or other. If anybody has any idea what that is, you know, you'd be a very good person to let us know. Speaking of good people, CNET is running an article that talks about vigilante hacking and how it's touted as the virus cure. This is from Reuters. Okay, floppy drive, you're really freaking me out. Las Vegas. Can vigilantism save computers from the next big virus threat? Striking back against a computer that is attacking you may be illegal under U.S. law, but a security researcher says people should be allowed to neutralize one that is unwittingly spreading destructive internet worms such as NIMDA. Neutralize one that is unwittingly. Yeah. Before I even read any further, what if mine, not that it ever would, what if mine was unwittingly sending this stuff to people? They have the right to destroy my machine? Look, I'm sorry, but I was using the program of death? Outlook Express, I think, is that what I called it? The Prague of Death? I don't know. Well, that's what it is now. Something of Death. If I do that, yeah, I'm a moron, but do I really deserve to get my computer destroyed? Arguably, the biggest threat the internet faces today is the propagation of a big worm. Truer words were never spoken, said Timothy Mullen, Chief Information Officer at Anchor IS at the DEFCON Hacker Conference here. So what does that tell you? Yeah. Worms are a form of self-propagating virus that, once set in motion, can wreak havoc by taking control of other machines. Once the virus has claimed a PC, it can then use the machine to launch attacks on the wider internet. The next worm is going to happen, and it's going to be worse, Mullen said, probably because he's going to send it out. The defensive strategy of strike back is gaining some support among politicians who will be voting on a bill backed by movie and music studios that would allow retaliation to help thwart internet piracy. And why even go on? You know where this is going. This is more about the RIAA and the MPAA saying, look, if we think you're pirating something, we should have the right to destroy you. Yeah. And we can do so without any consequences. You know, your ass is grass. If we think you're doing something that we don't approve of, oh, you're going down. We're taking you out. Nice, huh? Doesn't that give you a nice warm feeling in the pit of your stomach? Well, I'll leave the rest of the work up to you, the listeners, to comment on our message board, to email me, or dash@hackermind.net. Feel free to email him any of the topics I've talked about before he actually listens to the show. I know he'll get a kick out of that. I was going to mention some articles that I had found that, you know, one dealt with how hacking had become easier. I actually thought that article was a load of crap, so I mean, why bother? And another one that dealt with Wi-Fi honeypots as being a new hacker trap. But I'll tell you what, go to securityfocus.com and you can get all the information from our good friend Kevin Paulson, who we saw at H2K2 on that site. And we saw Kevin Paulson. Yeah, he got out of the elevator right behind us. Oh, yeah. I don't know how that makes me look good, but I thought it might. Obviously, I was mistaken. But saw Bernie has to. Yeah. Well, folks, the voice is running out on me, and we're nearing the end of the show. So normally I would be telling Dash to say goodnight right about now, but the good news is that you only have to wait about, oh, 3 or 4 more days for the next episode of HackerMind. Now, isn't that great? Yeah, and remember, we're going to be having a special episode. So tune in to find out what that's all about. And or at least we're going to try to have a special episode. I mean, we try to do a lot of things. Not everything can be done. We work hard, believe it or not, and we're working hard on getting those videos to you. Now, Equal Access Issue 3 has gone out, so if you subscribe, shut up. It's coming. No, I'm just kidding. You don't have to shut up. Just be quiet. Ah, kidding again. So, Equal Access Issue 3 has gone out, Volume 1, Issue 3, and videos are on their way, and yes, you can expect to see Han 2 any day now? Any week now? Any month now? Any year now? Who knows? Keep looking. Keep coming to HackerMind.net. And maybe you'll figure out just when we're going to put it up. And when we do, oh yes, you can download it. And don't worry. Don't worry. We lowered the quality. I think some of you had actually wanted the high-quality version of the show, which came out to about 95 megs. Yeah, ouch. But we just don't have the storage space available to do that. If demand is high enough, maybe we'll put it up for a week. You know, if people really want it, we'll tell you what week it's going to be up, and then we'll take it down. But we do have a 29 meg version that we are going to put up on the site eventually, and you can download it. And here what everyone's talking about. But that's about it for this week. So we'll see you next time. Well, we'll see you this week, actually. And hopefully Dash will be back. I trust that he will. And we'll have all sorts of new goodies for you, all sorts of weird curiosities, including myself and Dash. And, yeah, that's it. My voice is gone. We'll see you, folks.